Welcome to the Fiddle Jam Institute in our Masterclass podcast series. I hope you like this. We're just getting this started, this podcasting stuff. This one actually originated from me having an idea while I was driving in the car. And it took me about a minute to get in the flow of it. It's definitely a stream of consciousness kind of thing. And I was pleased enough where I thought we should do podcasts, and hopefully there'll be many more. I hope you enjoy. Hang in there for at least a minute. It's about 20 minutes long, and it's about how we all really know how to do most things perfectly already inside us and how to pull that out of us. Hope you enjoy. New idea for teaching methods. See if I can think this through. It just came during a lesson with Bill Ferguson today. It'll tie in my new age leanings into my fiddle jam method approach. The explaining it of, come on, wrap my head around this. That there's an innate intelligence in everything, it seems, at least in our own bodies. Kinesiologists know this, and your body knows through muscle testing what is good and what is bad for it, with concepts, with compounds, elements, ideas. You'll be stronger or weaker based on whether your body's intelligence, which is beyond your thinking mind, but it knows. I would bet that your body knows a lot of things, and some innate intelligence might be in the thing itself, or it could be like a tree could have its own innate intelligence, the earth could have its own innate intelligence. The American Indians definitely believe this. I'd go with that. Not to go so far afield, though. Could probably run with your body knows what's good for it and how to do everything it wants to do. Simple as that. Including play the mandolin, or play the violin, or at least play the part of this song on the mandolin. Your body already knows how to do it. Your body knows, some part of you already knows how to do it perfectly. Now, whether this is the part of you that's tapped into everybody who's ever done it before, whether it's the tapping into the innate intelligence of the universe on every possible subject, whether it's tapping into the idea that all thoughts ever thought are there for your access to a cosmic library. Some people call this the Akashic Record, by the way, the library of all thoughts and deeds ever done. That's where some psychics go to get their information. In the Fiddle Jam Method, maybe I need to tie in this, my most cosmic ideas, this way. That you already know. Part of you already knows how to jam perfectly, how to play perfectly. If you tap into this knowing, you will automatically play in time, in tune, in the mood, with grace, understanding, power, and authority. That's pretty good stuff, pretty powerful stuff. I first learned this, tying in my story, first experienced this, first committed to this when I was 14, at a lesson with Dennis Piewarski. He left the room to make a phone call while I worked on a passage, and I realized that, maybe it was a gift how I realized this, I don't know, that if I just imagined my hand going to the notes exactly a split second ahead of time, picturing the energy around my hand going to that note, it's almost like the ghost of me was playing the song. In time, in the flow of time of the passage of the tune, in space, and in sound, I could almost hear it ahead of time, then it always went better. It always went better. More smoothly, more graceful, with more authority. Yes. I've been working on that for 30 years. More than that. Going on 40 years. trying to get better at it every day. Every time I pick up an instrument, every time I do anything, although I often forget about it when I'm in daily life and just hone in on it when I'm in with an instrument in hand. I'm best at that. But you can do this concept and practice this concept during every waking moment. Every time you turn a doorknob, imagine yourself turning it and closing the door with complete grace and authority and balance. Every time you turn the key in the ignition of your car, every time you pick up a pencil, every time you cut with the knife while you hold the fork, everything can be done with this innate, graceful knowing. But especially playing an instrument, you can hear it ahead of time, you can picture your fingers going there ahead of time, a split second ahead of time. If you're relaxed, it does take some practice. Practice to get used to the idea of focusing on that as the prime objective, and practice to get used to the physical part and get that out of the way. Of course, I practiced music 8 hours a day as a teen, played music 8 hours a day to help get that out of the way, so I'm blessed there. Maybe you don't have that amount of time, but if I had really, really known that that was the game, as I'm telling you now, I had learned it by accident. I think. Maybe not by accident, but I was given a gift just without knowing about it. No one told me. It was up to me to develop it. I have developed it in myself. And just for you to know the game can get you to the goal. Know what the goal is can get you to the goal a lot faster. It's just logic there. You can flounder around as I did, thinking there's something there and finding it. Take you a lot longer because you don't have any roadmap to get there. I'm telling you, the way to joy, the way to the ultimate joy with jamming is to simply hone in on this ultimate knowing, this innate knowing, innate grace and authority that is already in you. You know how to play your mandolin, your violin, your fiddle, whatever you play. Perfectly already. A part of you already knows that. You can tap into that. What is the perfect way to hold your bow, perfect way to form your fingers? Become that. Let yourself, give yourself permission to become that. Become that. Become that. Let it become. Come to be. Let it come to be. You are that, and every ounce of your being is that in that moment. This is kind of a Zen kind of thing for sure. It's definitely in Eastern philosophy. We become one with the table or one with the chair you're sitting on. You don't have to go that far. It's become one with your instrument. And that is not the instrument you're playing, but the music you are making is the prime objective. And that comes from your mind and spirit first. Edgar Casey said, mind is the builder. So if you can picture it in your mind, you can hear it in your mind, if you can imagine it in your mind, you can do it. But I'm saying you can go further than that. It's not just knowing and picturing it, mentally imaging it. It's actually feeling it. You can feel how it will feel in your fingers. You can feel how the sound will make you feel ahead of time. You can feel how, on an emotional level, it'll make you feel, whether it's joyful or sad. That's where the real magic is. This is music, after all. Of muse, music. M-U-S-E-I-C. Ultimately, the word is music, but we've forgotten its true meaning. Music, of muse. Of creative deities, angels, spirit beings that inspire us. This is what music is. What it's supposed to be, in my opinion. I'm not saying I have every answer, all the answers, but this one answer is what I am intending to bring into the fold of my educational efforts a little harder in my branding and my stamp on how I approach music, my personal story. This is it for me. I vowed to myself. I've often told the story back, this is probably 25 years ago. I was playing bass guitar with the Shaken Smith Blues Band. Some of you know I'm also a bass player. and was a professional bass player for the first 8 years of my career before I focused on the violin primarily when I joined Gamelon. Anyways, this is while I was with Gamelon. When Gamelon was not on road, I'd play with the Shaken Smith Blues Band, and did so for about a year and a half. Shaken Smith, if you don't ever heard of him, is a harmonica virtuoso from my hometown of Buffalo. Never made it to the big time in the blues scene, but he did, in my opinion. Honer Harmonicas, he was an endorsing artist for. He was one of the months on their calendar, I remember, 1 year, so they knew about him. Virtuoso is virtuoso on the instrument. Anyways, I was playing with him, and he focused his music primarily on an older style of blues from the 1940s and 50s. That was his specialty. The bass lines on this kind of music are quite simple, usually. He focused mostly on 12-bar blues songs. And the 12-bar goes over and over and over, as many of you know. And all you have to do as a bass player is try and hear the perfect bass line in your head, listen to the drums, key in rhythmically with them and the guitar, and follow the changes, and play the perfect line. Now, this perfect line could have many shapes and forms and go many different directions, but I tried to always just honor hearing that perfect line ahead of time. Now, this 12-bar blues is very limited options. It's kind of easy to get there with a little practice. And when I did get there, it was in the zone, completely obeying the inner voice and playing the exact line I was hearing in my head. It felt like my hands would fill with energy, like I could heal someone or shove them through a brick wall or something, all this power in my hands. It was a great feeling. I got pretty good at it and really enjoyed playing with Shake. Anyways, the story goes, when I was in one of these zones and completely trying to obey my inner voice, at the end of the 12th bar, what we call the turnaround, the 11th to 12th bar of the form, I heard a little fancy riff to do in my head. And immediately my rational brain kicked in and said, no, wait, danger, don't do that, because I knew that Shake was a tough band leader. He hated bass players that noodled, and he had fired many before me for just that idea. So my rational mind kicked in, and when I was in the perfect flow, and said, no, don't do that. And I played something simpler that nobody in the band or the audience ever knew except me. And the clincher for me, though, was I'll be darned if the drummer standing 2 feet to my right-hand side didn't do the same exact fill rhythmically that I had pre-heard the fancy little bass riff in my head. We were psychically connected at that moment. And intuitively, we're on this exact same wavelength. I was completely bummed in myself. I said, man, here I am trying to be 100% in tune with the inner voice, and then when a challenge comes up, I thought about it. I put let the thinking mind, rational mind, and fear negate that. And that's where the magic is, when musicians psychically connect with each other and play things off the cuff that are exactly in tune with each other, sometimes having the same exact improvised riffs together. That's magic. I was completely bummed at myself for having not been obedient to that voice. And again, nobody else knew except for me. But when talking about it in the break after, and I mentioned it to Shake, he said, oh no, you had the wrong idea. It's not that I don't mind inspiration. It's I hate guys noodling to try and get the chicks and not honoring the song. So in that moment, I completely blew it, but I learned an important lesson and vowed to myself from that day on that I would never, ever second-guess my inner voice again, ever, if possible. Now, have I ever been there 100% of the time? Once or twice. So it's a tall mountain to climb to play 100% in the zone, completely listening to your inner voice and being obedient to that only. The bar has raised over the years, over the last 25 years for me, to be up in the 90th percentile, I think, for myself. Most gigs, most times, I'm playing, 95% of the time, I'm playing exactly what I hear and what I hear in my head only, which is always the goal. Now, sometimes I'll cheese out and do some, pre-planned riff, that'd be good here, and that's okay. I leave about 10% wiggle room for that. You got to show off a little bit to sell yourself. But I'm even doing that on purpose. And as I'm passing a truck here, I'm doing this while I drive. Big oversized load. Anyways, yes, I even do the cheesy riffs sometimes. Cheesy pre-planned riffs on purpose. So I'm still aware of that all the time. No, I've heard people complain to me, students, when I've talked about this. Oh, you know, but the ideas I hear in my head, I can't do. Well, one, practice. That'll help. Practice a lot, that'll help. But that's not the idea, usually. I've found in my experience that playing the perfect idea for the song is usually not that complicated. It's not that fast and quick. As a matter of fact, it's usually on the simpler side and the more joyful side, with more space and more rhythmic interest to it. So examine where your ideas are coming from. Are they coming just from your ego? Oh, I want to play this fantastic riff to show off. Or is it really just trying to be part of the song, be one with the song, and listen to what the song, in its innate intelligence, is trying to tell you what to play to it, and with it, and for it. Becoming one with the song, becoming the song. Sounds pretty hippy-dippy, I know, but it's where it's at. If you want to feel the maximum joy in your playing, this is it. It's profoundly deep feeling when you can play and just be a complete obedient servant, not just to the audience, but to the innate intelligence of your instrument, of the ideas, of the song, of the mood of the space you're in. It could be a bar, it could be a closet, it could be a concert hall, it could be a theater, it could be a stadium, it doesn't matter. Tap into that, and much happiness will follow. If you don't, there's always a level of misery that will follow. And in not intensity, that's a good thing, but being tense and not relaxed, not settled, not centered. So speaking of centering, there's a technique I learned too called visual centering that you could check out. It's helped me sometimes, where you put your attention when you're looking at things. You can do this in your daily life. You can practice sitting still, of course. If you look up visual centering, there's a teacher that does this. Not a music teacher either, just a personal coach teacher on the internet. I can't remember her name right off the bat, but it's the idea that you put your thinking, when we get into fear spaces, like, you know, not paying attention to our inner and, you know, trying to worry that we're going to play the song right, this is confirmed with the MRI imaging, magnetic resonance imaging, through scientific equipment, that when we get into this fear, too much thinking state, our thinking actually moves to the frontal lobes of our brain. It's a different space. When we're relaxed, in more of the alpha wave stuff that the meditators get, our thinking is more in the center of our brain. There's a place where you can take it too far back, where you're too removed, and that's where, like, dangerous psychopaths are most of the time, they say. So their brainwave activity is in the back of their head. But in the center of your brain, you can do this. You can move around your thoughts in your brain. Just become aware of how you're thinking and where you're thinking physically, and that'll help you get there. If you look up this, you know, visual centering on the internet, you'll find this person, and she does it with a camera close up on her face, and you can see her face change when you do it. She moves her brain forward, you can see the worry in her eyes, and it's very subtle stuff. But we all can read these subtle things in ourselves and in other people. It just takes a little practice. So if you're having trouble getting to that brain spot, back off and put your thinking in the center of your brain. That could help you. It's another kind of weird technique, but it's helped me a little bit. I think when I'm relaxed, I'm there. When I'm fearful, oh my God, so-and-so is here. I have to do good now. They haven't heard me. Could be your mother. Could be your uncle. Could be your friend. Oh, my friend hasn't heard me in 6 months, and I'm playing so much better now. I want to do good. I better do good. All of a sudden, you go to the frontal lobes of your brain, and you don't sound as good. Relax. Get to the back. Play lightly. Follow the thing. Don't be distracted by anyone. Now, anyone can be distracted by something. I heard an interview with my hometown hero, Billy Sheehan, the bass player, rock bass player extraordinaire. Super famous guy, plays all over the world, played 80,000 seats, stadiums, etc. He said, yeah, now you think a guy like that with that kind of experience wouldn't be fazed by anything. And he said at one gig, Billy is a Scientologist, and his hero is Chick Corea, the famous jazz pianist, who's also a Scientologist. And I am not a Scientologist, but I just thought I'd point that out. He had the highest respect for Chick Corea. I've met Chick a number of times. He's a great guy. One of my old students is his road manager, actually, and fabulous pianist. And Billy was nervous. to play in front of chick. Now, this guy's played in front of tens of thousands of people all the time. And one person in the audience freaked him out, and he was a wreck, he said. Not that he was shaking, but he didn't play as he wasn't centered in his brain. He didn't wasn't in his on his game. So, no matter what level, you can be distracted. Like I said, it could be your mother, it could be someone famous, it could be anyone that you want to play well for, or just that you want to play. Willie Nelson, my hero, he says often in his The Tao of Willie, he says, sometimes we just want it too bad, too hard. In the opening, prelude to that book, what it's called, prologue of that book, his best friend, who's often his golfing partner, says, yeah, Willie has his magic to it. When we go golfing, he's got a golf swing. It looks like he's got a frozen turkey tied to the end of his golf club. He's a terrible golfer. But often he beats me, he says. And he said, the better he does, the worse I do, because I want to win. Which is a great thing in a competitive sense, but in a creative sense, it's not. It gets in the way. It's a stumbling block. The worse I want to win, this guy says, the worse I play. And Willie has often told me, you just want it too bad. So wanting something bad in a way is good, but wanting something creatively is not. So it can be a stumbling block. So find yourself. Be true to yourself. Being a creative musician is definitely an inward journey, and you'll work the kinks out of you by it. It can be a great teacher for that. It'll point out where you're screwing up, not only just in music, but in life. Like, I care too much about what other people think, or, I care about what that person thinks too much. It's good to be aware. Remember, we are our servants. We are servants of people around us. We are servants not to just people around us. We are servants to the spirit of music. Music. Of Muse. Well, speaking of being a servant, I am driving down the road and I'm coming to my teaching gig right now, where I teach the strings at a local Waldorf school 2 days a week. And I am pulling into the parking lot now. So if this becomes a podcast, this is fantastic. I think it's a good subject, and I enjoyed talking the whole way and not being bored. And if you've listened this long, thank you so much for listening. I hope what I've said is a blessing to you, as it has been to me. Peace.